Hey, welcome to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're digging into The Unexpected Joy of the Ordinary by Catherine Gray. Sophie, I have to ask, why does a book about boring stuff hit so hard?
Hey there, Sam. Because it's not really about boring stuff. It's about the lie we've all bought, that happiness is a destination just over the horizon, and Gray basically takes that lie apart chapter by chapter.
Right? And she starts with her own story, which is not a quiet little memoir opening. She had this high-octane life, full of alcohol-fueled highs and brutal lows. She calls it the happiness hangover.
Yeah, and that phrase does a lot of work. Every spike of intense joy came with an inevitable crash, so she was basically addicted to the next hit. New experience, new purchase, new achievement, then the craving starts again.
That treadmill feeling. You get the promotion, you're ecstatic for a week, and then it's just Tuesday again. Isn't that wild?
That's hedonic adaptation, and Gray leans on the science here. Humans return to a fairly stable happiness level after big wins and big losses alike. It's not a character flaw, it's biology.
And her point is that consumer culture has weaponized that. The thrill fades, so we're told to buy something new. New phone, new trip, new version of ourselves.
Exactly.
But her fix isn't to outrun the adaptation. It's to work with it. She calls it re-enchantment, which is basically the practice of seeing the familiar as if it were the first time.
I actually pushed back on this when I first read it because it sounds a little soft. Like, just notice your coffee, Sam. But then she grounds it in actual strategies, and I stopped rolling my eyes.
What got me was microdose gratitude, not the big stuff. The warmth of a radiator on a cold day, a perfectly ripe piece of fruit, clean sheets, tiny pleasures deliberately noticed.
Clean sheets is such a good one. You know that feeling when you get into bed and the sheets are cold and crisp? That's a whole event, and we treat it like nothing.
Right.
And then she goes after our phones. The digital declutter argument. Constant connection to other people's curated lives is a primary source of our dissatisfaction.
Which tracks? You scroll for 10 minutes, and suddenly your kitchen is too small and your vacation wasn't good enough. Nothing changed except what you looked at.
And here's the counterintuitive part. She champions routine, not as a prison but as comfort, making the bed, brewing tea, walking the same route to work. Those rituals become anchors.
Yeah, you remember last week when I tried this with my mornings? I stopped checking my phone first thing and just made coffee slowly. Honestly, it was weirdly grounding.
See, that's the re-enchantment thing in action. Same coffee, same kitchen, different attention. The ordinary didn't change. Your noticing did.
Then there's her reframing of boredom, which is the part one did not see coming. We treat boredom like a problem to solve with a screen. And she says no, boredom is a gateway.
That's the soil where creativity and self-awareness grow. When you fill every spare moment with noise, you rob yourself of the mental space where daydreams and unexpected connections happen.
So sitting in a waiting room with no phone isn't wasted time. It might be the most useful 10 minutes of your day.
If you can tolerate it.
And that's the skill. Sitting with the discomfort of being alone with your thoughts, which most of us have completely lost.
The other thing I loved is that she refuses toxic positivity. She's not telling you to smile through it. She says the pursuit of constant happiness is itself a form of suffering.
Yeah, because when you try to avoid pain, sadness, and disappointment, you actually amplify them. The ordinary life includes grief and frustration too. The goal isn't to pick which feelings you get.
That hit me. When you stop running from the hard feelings, they're usually less terrifying than you imagined. They pass like a storm, and the ordinary landscape is still there.
And that's what she means by the unexpected joy. It's not loud or explosive. It's quiet and steady and resilient. The joy of feeling safe, of being present, of knowing you're enough as you are.
Enoughness. That's the spine of the whole book. Our culture runs on scarcity. Never enough money, time, success, and love. And she flips it.
She says enough is not a condition out in the world. It's a state of mind, and it's a choice. You can choose that what you have right now is enough, and who you are right now is enough.
And to be clear, she's not arguing for complacency. She's not saying give up your dreams. She's saying there's a difference between climbing a mountain because you want the view and climbing it because you're running from the valley.
That's the line I underlined. And she backs all of it with research, from Stoic philosophy to neuroscience, without ever drowning you in jargon. She writes like a friend who's been through the ringer.
The essays are lovely too. Long-term relationships as shared history rather than constant romance. Home is a sanctuary of mess and memory. A walk is a chance to notice the light and the birds.
And none of it requires quitting your job or moving to a monastery. It just asks you to shift your attention. That's the radical accessibility of it.
Okay, so the one thing I'm actually taking away, the life I'm living right now, with all its routines and imperfections, is not a waiting room for a better one. It's the main event.
And if you want to go deeper, the whole library lives at 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. The joy you're chasing isn't a destination, it's a way of seeing, and it's been hiding in plain sight all along. We'll see you in the next one.